It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows. The Lord is speaking, huh? Out of fear of me, the sun shines out of fear of me, and the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. Fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about, taking its toll out of fear of me. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, says in Bhagavad Gita that the natural laws being enacted are correct in all activities because of his superintendence. No one should think that nature is working automatically without superintendence. The Vedic literature says that the clouds are controlled by the demigod Indra. Heat is distributed by the sun god. The soothing moonlight is distributed by Chandra, and the air is blowing under the arrangement of the demigod Vayu. But above all these demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the chief living entity. Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. Wonderful. The demigods are also ordinary living entities, but due to their faithfulness, their devotional service attitude, they have been promoted to such posts. These different demigods or directors, such as Chandra, Varuna and Vayu, are called Adhikari Devata. Adhikari means they have a certain ability, and that's why they are the Devatas. The demigods are departmental heads. The government of the Supreme Lord consists not only of one planet or two or three. There are millions of planets and millions of universes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a huge government, and he requires assistance. The demigods are considered his bodily limbs. These are the descriptions of Vedic literature. Under these circumstances, the sun god, the moon god, the fire god, and the air god are working under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. The natural laws are being conducted under his superintendence. Because he is in the background, everything is being performed punctually and regularly. Now listen please to this last passage where Srila Prabhupada brings this knowledge to our platform of practical application. The Lord is controlling all the demigods, who in turn control wind, sunshine, rain, fire, and also death. Huh? So what does this mean? When the Lord is, that the Lord is the, in the background. It means this. One who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely protected from all other influences. He no longer serves or is obliged to anyone else. Of course, he is not disobedient to anyone, but his full power of thought is absorbed in the service of the Lord. The statements by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila, that under his direction the air is blowing, the fire is burning, and the sun is giving heat, are not sentimental. The impersonalist may say that the Bhagavatam devotees create and imagine someone as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and assign certain qualifications to him. But actually, it is neither imagination nor an imposition of artificial power in the name of Godhead. In the Vedas it is said, Bishashmat vata pavate bishodeti surayaha. By fear of the Supreme Lord, the wind god and the sun god are acting. Vishasmat agnishendrasya mrityo dhavati panchama. Agni, Indra and Mrityu are also acting under his direction. These are the statements of the Vedas. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale. See, Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyare Satarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda. Yadvaita Gadadhara Ivashadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Let us again read this verse. Matbayat vativato yang suryastapati matbayat vashatindro dahat yaknir mrityuscharati matbayat. Translation. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows out of fear of me. The sun shines out of fear of me. And the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. Fire burns out of fear of me. Death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung in Sharanagati a verse where he praises the supreme control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead over all that is. The verse reads, Tumi Sarveshwara Brajendra Kumara Tomara Ichaya Vishve Srijane Samharam. You are Sarveshvareshvara, the controller of everything. By your mere will, creation, maintenance, and annihilation takes place. That means Krishna has a supreme will. If he desires, then the wind blows. If he desires, the sun gives light and heat. Indradev gives rain, the fire burns, and Yamaraj comes as death, all according to his will. Krishna is all powerful. He is the mover of all other movers, and therefore the mover of all movements. In Sanskrit grammar, this is described to be the instrumental case, that everything is an instrument in the hands of the Lord. And it is the Lord only who is the active principle behind everything. There is a Upanishad, which most probably you all have heard about, the Kena Upanishad. Kena means by whom. It's a question. Kena. Kena. By whom is this done? We might ask this question when we eat prasadam. By whom is this prasadam cooked and served? Huh? By whose strength, intelligence and power this comes about? In the Kena Upanishad, we find a very interesting Ishtagosti. It's somewhere in the mountains where all the devatas wish to know who is the active principle behind everything, who is the mover behind all movements. And they send different devatas to inquire. Now, next to the mountain where this mela, or let us say conference of the powerful devata takes place, they all of a sudden see on the top of another mountain a light. You might know that there's a holy mountain in China. Wungchu is a mountain called, and even to this day you see light and mysterious beings who spread this light on the top of that mountain, especially during May. Then you look at this holy mountain and it's almost like a controlled firework. Controlled in the sense that it is not so wild and so on. And very often the people see a young boy who has a golden effulgence walking over the mountain. Who is this? Hare Krishna. So the devatas saw a luminous being, and they sent Vayu to inquire who this was. It was actually Lord in a covered form, in a hidden form, not in his original form. So Vayu came and said, "Who are you?" He could approach this being which was full of light. And you know, in Vedic culture, it is not polite to ask a superior, "Who are you?" without first introducing yourself and telling who you are. It's considered highly impolite, you know. Who are you to ask this, such a question to a superior person? You first say, "I am the very insignificant so-and-so. I have learned under so-and-so. And may I, with great respect, inquire as to your identity." This is how you do. So this being looked at Vayu and said, "Who are you? First introduce yourself." Vayu said, "I am Vayu. And what can you do? What are your activities?" have you not heard about Vayu? I can blow everything away. I'm moving even the planets, who are held by planetary cords. To, they're anchored in the universe, and they're moving about, but I'm moving them. That the being produced a piece of straw, put it before Vayu and said, please blow this away. Vayu said, he felt a little humiliated to be given such a little task. It's almost like asking one of you, or Jai Krishna does, who's a highly able to calculate and so on. Please tell us, what is 1 + 1? It would almost be an offense to ask a highly competent person such a easy question. You know, so why you felt a little thing, but so he'd, but the straw remained where it was. The straw remained where it was. Stronger and stronger he blew, until he put his whole strength into moving this insignificant piece of straw, but it remained where it was. It seemed to have become more heavy than the Himalayan mountains. Hare Krishna. Sisi Radha Gopinath ki jai. The being said, I don't think you are Vayu. I don't think you can blow away anything. You can't even blow away an insignificant piece of straw. Go home. Vayu was thrown into an existential crisis. He knew he was Vayu, but it seemed to not work any longer, his Vayu-ness. He went back and he told about his experience. He said to the powerful demigods, and they said, this seems to be a very powerful being. Let us send Agni to inquire who this is. The Agni went and asked the luminous being and said, who are you, please? The being again looked at Agni and said, please introduce yourself first, as it is the etiquette. I'm Agni. Really? What can you do? Well, I can burn anything. Is it so? Then the being produced again a piece of straw. Please burn this to show that you are Agni. Agni again felt highly offended in a way. Such a little task. The curtains are open. We cannot give the proper sound illustration. So he tried to burn it, but it wouldn't burn. He invested more strength into burning the piece of straw. It remained there. And finally he threw himself with all his might upon the piece of straw. Agni can burn a whole planet like this, no problem. But he could not burn the piece of straw. And he was very, very, very disturbed. He was thrown into a major existential crisis, just like Vayu. And he went back to the Devatas and told him, it seems in the presence of this being, all my powers are insignificant and are taken away from me. I could not get an answer who this is. I believe the most intelligent person amongst us has to go to this task. So the devatas looked around and decided Indra is the most intelligent. Now, as you know, Indra is intelligent, but he has a weakness. He's highly attracted to the opposite sex. So the Lord knew Indra would come, and he's so intelligent, and he also thought, well, I want to bewilder Indra's intelligence as well. And he turned himself into the most beautiful of women. So Indra came. But when he saw where the being was, this luminous, powerful, effulgent being, he saw a most wonderful lady. So his intelligence was blocked, and he said, "Oh la la! Oh la la!" You know, he was, I think we say like this in French, I have to inquire still a little bit more, but I think this is what we say. He was bewildered, and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I feel it's inappropriate for me to look at you, but wow, you're so beautiful." He really became bewildered and came under the charm of this lady. And all of a sudden, the Lord decided to remove his illusory potency. He said, "Indra, you have come to inquire who I am. I am your Lord. You must know, Indra, that all you demigods only are my instruments. It's by my strength that Vayu can blow, by my strength that Agni can burn, and by my strength that you can think. But if I take the strength away from you, you are nothing. You cannot even move or burn a piece of straw. You cannot think even if I remove my strength. Kena, by whose strength is everything moving? It's by Krishna's, by the Lord's strength." And after Lord Vishnu had given this lesson to the sometimes arrogant devatas, he again disappeared, and he again was no longer present. My dear devotees, let us now take this simple point and bring it a little closer to our lives and draw out some possible implications or conclusions from this, that it is the Lord who is moving everyone, and even the powerful devatas are actually only instruments of the Lord. I'm sorry, this leg always falls asleep. This is so troubling. Yes, in one Upanishad, it is very nicely explained that we live through the Lord. It is, in other words, the Lord is empowering us and giving us our opportunities. The Lord is the strength behind our thinking and our abilities. And we are really only puppets in the hands of the Lord. An example is given, and because we have heard it so often, I will just bring it to your attention by telling the principles. I think you all remember how this Upanishad brings this point that all the limbs of the body live through the stomach, and once they didn't want to acknowledge this and did not feed the stomach any longer, and then felt very hungry. I think we've heard this, no? Yes. In the same way, the Lord is the center, and we have to first serve Him, and then by Him we will be maintained, and our life will become successful, and we will obtain what we wish to attain. We should, in other words, not try to independently serve ourselves and our needs. We should surrender to the Lord. And just like the limbs of the body cannot eat independently, the hand, for instance, could not take the bread and just try to somehow bring it into the bloodstream by I don't even know how to explain it, by somehow trying to press it into the blood. In the same, it has to feed the bread through the stomach, and in this way the body will be nourished. We also have to go through Krishna and first take serve Him. Then only we will be taken care of. My dear devotees, we have heard this so often, but do we actually live like this? Are we really satisfying Krishna first? Or are we thinking as we grow older, no, now I have to make some arrangements for me. It doesn't work. This is a theoretical principle. It's nice to hear it in the Bhagavatam class, but let it remain in the Bhagavatam class. Mm-mm. How much is each one of us really aware of this principle, that Krishna comes first? I believe that to really incorporate this principle into our life takes a lot of faith, a lot of sadhana, that means by which our heart gets purified from illusion, and some experiences of surrender without strings attached to it. Some experiences that when I surrender, Krishna is really there and takes care of my needs and myself. Mm-mm. See, we are so much embedded into taking things in our own hands and trying to do everything on our own, that this principle is something which does escape us. The old Greek philosophers, they said eros. With eros, they didn't mean physical love. Eros is pervading every cell of our body. And it drives us as conditioned souls for trying to express our erotic love and then make it physical love. It is, they said, it's just there. So this conditioned response, I will now go to our philosophy, to taking the life into our hand and trying to make it work independently from Krishna, is a very strong in us. The Vedics, I do not know where it is, it's a commonly heard story, that there was once a king who wanted to really make a point to his ministers. He was very old and he was just about to die. So he was issueless. Issueless means he didn't have a son and also no daughter. And he needed to pick the next king from his ministers. Naturally, he wanted to find out who's the most qualified amongst his ministers. And he said that he would invite his ministers and decide at a banquet. Banquet means a dinner? Dinner? Lunch, maybe. No? Banquet. Mm-hmm. Banquet. A lunch. So he had all his cooks. It was a special lunch. You will not forget this lunch, even when you hear it. He had all his cooks cooking the preparations, and then he made little tables where two people could sit facing each other. You know, two tables, and for two sitting places, and he had the meal served, and the ministers were requested to take their seat. And then the king said, "My dear ministers, this is an important meal. We will choose who is my successor in this occasion, in this event, and I just want to alert you to something." He waved his hands, and then from each side 20 of the best of slaves came. Their bodies were muscular, they were oiled. The king, and they carried swords on the side. The king said, "You will now eat, but it is forbidden in this meal to bend the arm. You have to leave it stretched out." Manohar, you could do this in the restaurant. You could give this order to your Belgium customers who come. They would not forget it for sure. If these guards which are here see any one of you moving their hands, bringing the food like this to the mouth, they will take their sword. When he mentioned the word sword, they all went like, shush! And they will cut your head off your shoulders. Without any hearing, no explanation, your heads will immediately be severed, and the heads will be taken and thrown into a garbage container. Hare Krishna. This is the meal. Good appetite. So the ministers try to eat. They had to bring the food to the mouth. I mean, maybe it worked in a yogic way, maybe a little bit more. There was a sound of cracking bones, but no one was able to eat. Ministers said, "Your Majesty, we can't eat." One tried to just throw, but he was so agitated or nervous, thinking that maybe this also not allowed in my head, you know, that he just missed his mouth and it went in his eye. And they said, "Your Majesty, under these conditions, we prefer to not eat. It is not, no, it is not possible to eat like this." And then the king, who was very serious about it, said, "Be ready. I will call you in a moment." And he asked his servants to come and sit down. He told the conditions, same condition: you cannot bend your arm to bring the food into your mouth. And the servants sat down, and it took them exactly 1 minute to figure out how to eat. They took the food and gave it to the person facing them, and that other person gave the food into the mouth of the other servants. This is how they enjoyed puris, jalebis. What else? There was no pizza, but all the good things of the world they enjoyed by serving the others. So when the king saw this, he had tears in his eyes. This was exactly his point. He called the ministers and he said, "Look at this beautiful scene. They have figured it out, because they were not caught in that paradigm in which you work. That is, me first and my desires first. They are servants. They know. They serve a master or someone else. That's how they live. They live by service. You live by enjoying. So this king, that was his point, needs to be a servant of the people, not an enjoyer of the people's work and so on. None of you is qualified, my dear ministers. The next king will be a servant. Hare Krishna. I don't know if you know this how the story ends, but maybe he just was satisfied to make this point and then put a minister in, because you need some brain also to rule a kingdom. This is how the story goes. It's a total different approach to reality. In our Bhaktivedanta College seminar, we have presented to our to ourselves, we have explored the power of blessings. We have quoted Srila Prabhupada as saying that, especially in spiritual life, you will become successful not by your own endeavors, but by blessings. It's a total different concept than we are used to. It sounds almost like a paradoxical thing, but it can be explained. I mean, the reason why this works is because Krishna anyways is sanctioning everything. And if he is not sanctioning, it doesn't work. Krishna is anyways the supreme controller over all controllers, including you. Not except with the exception of you, including you and all of us. And by Krishna's sweet will, everything does, everything can work out. It is this mood or this recognition which is necessary for the devotees of the Lord to understand and to emulate in their lives. The Mahabharata tells us the story of how the Pandavas once came into a dilemma. As we all know, Duryodhana always wanted to somehow kill them, inconvenience them, humiliate them, finish them, even when they lived in exile in the forest. And one devilish plan of Duryodhana was to somehow request Durvasa, who traveled always with 10,000 disciples, to visit the Pandavas after Draupadi and the Pandavas had eaten. Draupadi and the Pandavas had three pots from the sun god which produced food up until the moment when Draupadi was satisfied. Then the pots needed almost like a digestion system. They needed a pause for 6 hours or so until Draupadi would again become hungry, and then they would start to produce again. But the moment Draupadi had eaten and felt satisfied, they stopped their production. These pots would be very nice for Manohar Prabhu to have, or even for our kitchen when we have so many guests, you know, that they produce and produce and come more, no problem. Wonderful subjects, whatever you wish, just say it and they produce it. But the moment the person who has the ownership of the spot is satisfied, production stopped. So Duryodhana knew this, and he knew by his spies when Draupadi had eaten. He sent Durvasa at a time to the Pandavas in the forest when Draupadi had eaten. In Vedic culture, the Atithi guest, that is the one who comes unannounced, is considered to be a representative of the Lord and must be fed. There is no question of not feeding them. It's a grave offense to not feed him. So Duvasha came. Pandava saw them coming. Draupadi had eaten. Yudhishthira received them and said, "Welcome, our guests. Welcome. We will do our best to offer you hospitality. Would you like to take a little noon bath? There's a very suitable river here in the near, near here." So Durvasa said, "Very good idea," and went with all his disciples to take a bath. Yudhishthira said, "We will prepare the meal, and as you come out, then you please sit down and be our guest." He sent Bhishma out to pick some berries. But even for Bhishma to pick a berry, satisfying berry meal for 10,001 people was too much. Now, Draupadi knew this was all Duryodhana's trickery, and she called to her Lord, "My Lord, please help us from Durvasa Muni's wrath. We know if we don't satisfy him and his disciples, he will curse us." So at that moment, it is said, I heard it once from Govinda Maharaj, Krishna was sitting down in Dwaraka, sitting down to eat the food which Rukmini, his queen, was just bringing him. The plate was there. But then Krishna heard the call of Draupadi. And he said to Rukmini, "It's an urgent case. I can't accept my meal. I will eat at the house of Draupadi. No problem." And he appeared before in the forest where the Pandavas were, and where all this danger accumulated. So Draupadi saw all of a sudden Krishna coming close. And Krishna, without saying a word, said, "Draupadi, I just sat down to take my meals. I'm so hungry. Do you have anything to eat? I know you called me." And Draupadi said, "My Lord, this is the problem. We have nothing to eat. This is exactly the problem why I called you. Durvasa Muni." And she wanted to explain the whole story, but of course Krishna knew, and he said, "Draupadi, but I'm so hungry. Please see if there is something to eat in your pots. Maybe something is left, just a little bit." Draupadi said, "My Lord." She dutifully, as a good devotee, went, and yes, there was some leafy vegetables sticking to the brim of one of the pots. And she took that, served it with a glass of water to the Lord and said, "That's all we have." Krishna smilingly ate it, drank a little water, and said, "This was such a good meal. I now have to take a rest." You know, after a good meal, we have to naturally rest. I have to rest now and digest. "My Lord, but I called you because your devotees are in danger. I'm just so tired now." And Krishna lay down to rest. Now, at this moment, as the Lord was resting, the yogis felt a tremendous feeling of being entirely bloated. "Boom! What? I'm so full," said one yogi. "What happened?" And all the other yogis said, and also Durvasa Muni, "Really full, intensely full, painfully full." Vasha said, "Oh my God, we can't possibly eat anything. Even the thought of eating gives trouble to our system." We have to run away. What if Yudhishthira, or imagine Bhishma, the cook, comes and he has made all the arrangements and then we don't eat anything. What an offense on our part. We better run away from this danger. Bhishma is very strong. And they all ran away. And when Yudhishthira came, thinking, oh, now we will all be finished. When he came to the river to call the yogis, no one was there. Only wet, wet traces in the forest. They had all escaped and so on. Yudhishthira went back and the Lord was sitting there and he was smiling and he said, where are the yogis? Yudhishthira said, they are gone, Govinda, they are gone. Another miracle. And the Lord said, well, if the Lord is satisfied, if the stomach is satisfied, then all other limbs who are part of the body are satisfied. And all are part of me. Even Durvasa and his 10,000 followers, they are also part of me. So this is a story how you serve Krishna first and then all your other needs, including protection from curses, are taken care with this. It takes this is a this is something. Now the question which I would like to raise, how do you know that the Lord is pleased? How do you know that you apply this principle? What is your proof? It's a good question, isn't it? We are saying, let us please the Lord first. We all know that it's not always easy to do so. It is what pleases the Lord. It certainly pleases him to make arrangements that everyone is well situated, has a suitable means of income and so on. It's very how to surrender to Krishna. One devotee asked this question also. I would like to offer two answers to this question, to my own question to you. But I want to see what your thoughts are on this. How do you know that the Lord is satisfied? If his devotees are satisfied, Tina. If the spiritual master is satisfied, Yadunandan.
I heard that Srila Prabhupada once answered a similar question, saying, "If you are satisfied." Meaning, I understand he was meaning spiritually satisfied.
I heard, says Yadunandan, that you know if you yourself are satisfied in a spiritual sense, internally, spiritually satisfied. Let us explore this question. Your answers are very good and I don't have much more to say, but I would really like that we all explore it a little bit. It said, by pleasing the Lord, everything else is taken care of. And there is this verse in the Bhagavatam which compares this, the Lord, with the root of the tree. If you pour water to the root of the tree, then all the leaves are satisfied. Then the Bhagavatam verse gives the second analogy, which we have heard. If you give food to the stomach, the limbs are satisfied. I think this is such an amazing verse. We just don't think of our own satisfaction. We just think of the satisfaction of someone else, and then we are satisfied. Really? Will it work? It will work because, yes, the Lord is the root and He is all powerful and He does have, He has given this promise that my devotees will not perish. He has given this promise while touching His head and to His heart. It means He really means it. That is a commentary of Baladev Vidyabhushana. He touched His hand to the heart. He was serious when He said it. So, one way to know is to satisfy the spur to master. There's a verse where Krishna Himself says this. It comes in the, those of you who like to read verses in the scriptures and explore this, these subjects more. It's in the 10th canto, 80th chapter. 80th means 80, 34th verse. I'm so pleased with the person who satisfied the guru to the best of his ability. Krishna is really pleased with someone who does so. He says he's not so much satisfied by an observer of Varnashram Dharma and of other scriptural codes, but as he is with a person who satisfies the guru to the best of his ability. This is how Krishna becomes pleased. And, but another sign where you can really...
Oh, sorry. Haribo.
Another sign where you can really know if you can... the guru you can ask, is this all right what I do? Is it satisfying? Is it pleasing? Another very nice way is what Yadunandan Prabhu said. I remember having heard this also from Srila Prabhupada in a lecture, that if one is immediately satisfied if one sees satisfies Krishna. It's really, and we all know this, when we become, for instance, more Krishna conscious in our lives, immediately you feel a type of relief. It is said when you go to the holy Dham, you contact two energies. That means perceivable, feelable energies. It's the Taraka Shakti, that which liberates you, and the Paraka Shakti, that which attracts and pulls you to Krishna. These two energies work always in bhakti. Someone who has bhakti in his heart immediately feels relief from miseries and attraction and closeness to Krishna. So this type of satisfaction of the heart is the reward which Lord Krishna gives to his true devotees who satisfy him first. They feel satisfaction in the heart and a pulling to Krishna. Not so much the constant pull by the material energy to other things. They can feel this. It's immediately a reward which one feels as one engages in true bhakti. Good. I think I will look now at the wristwatch. It's 5 minutes to nine. Do you have questions regarding this? Yadunandan is there, Krishna Kumar is there, Ranga Devi is there.
How to reconcile what you explained, that we shouldn't think of ourselves but depend on Krishna?
Please repeat.
How to reconcile?
Yes.
Your explanation that we should depend on Krishna.
Yes.
We also hear sometimes that We shouldn't, like the story of Radha Das Goswami when he was not covering
his head.
Radharani came to protect him. And one of the other Goswamis told him, you should at least build a cottage so that Radharani would not come to serve.
Yeah.
So how to put together these
two together? This is a very relevant question. How to put the two together, that in one way we should depend on Krishna, and on the other side we should not challenge him to take care of our own needs, almost as our servant. And the example was given of Raghunath Das Goswami, who sat in the sun, hot midday sun, without covering his head, and then Srimati Radharani had to come and take care of him. See, this becoming dependent on Krishna means also to become dependent on Krishna's arrangement. To be very specific, Lord Krishna has said in the Bhagavad Gita how society should go on. He has spoken of four divisions, which each one has its own duties. You know, the Vanashram system is really a mold, or a frame, I should say, a frame in which we have to situate ourselves and do the duties ascribed to each vana and ashram. For a grihastha, he will have his grihastha duties, which are different from the brahmacharis and the few brahmacharis and the few sannyasis in society. There, the grihastha's dependence on Krishna will be to work and give one's an endeavor, and then yes, make himself dependent on Krishna in this way. You know, you can work as much as you want. Sometimes nothing works if it's not Krishna who recognizes you. As a sannyasi, for instance, I do know that I can't just sit somewhere and expect to be maintained. I really have to do my part of surrender. That means selfless service in the preaching mission of my spiritual master. It's tough to do that. You can see the sannyasis who come and visit you. They sometimes you say, "Baba Maharaj, please take good rest here. You know, we understand you are overworked. You please take good rest." We see. So that's how each member in the society does need to find Krishna's, accept Krishna's placement and the duties which go together. But this does not mean now I'm independent if I work and do my business from independent from Krishna. I have to do my duties. This is a very important question, and as far as my understanding goes, this is a very interesting answer. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written also for most devotees, it's absolutely necessary to situate themselves in Varnashram. Only those rare souls who have raga in their heart, that is spontaneous attraction to Krishna with love, they will not need the support of Krishna's Vanashram system. Yes, Krishna Kumar Prabhu.
Yeah, we often hear that one way that we can know whether Krishna is satisfied with us is through the devotees are satisfied. But it seems like what is satisfying to the devotees sometimes it changes over time. And like if we go back 15 years in ISKCON or 20 years, then some of the things that people would do to satisfy the devotees then, if they were to do it now, people would be pretty offended. And we might ask ourselves, maybe some of the things that are satisfying to the devotees devotees now, in 20 years in retrospect, will seem rather foolish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, how could we like keep that the satisfaction of the devotees as our motivation, but at the same time not make mistakes?
Yeah. Hare Krishna. It seems, says Krishna Kumar, that what satisfies the devotees changes over the years. If you would try to satisfy the devotees in the way you did successfully 15 years ago, now they would maybe feel unsatisfied with you. So how to keep this principle alive, and not make the mistake like this. I'm already thinking so much of the answer that the question is registered in my heart. Many things in this world have different levels, and to understand the levels, and we need to understand the levels. For instance, satisfying the devotee. There are things which are of, let me say, changing quality, and there are also unchangeable ways of satisfying a devotee. A devotee is always satisfied. That always works. It worked 5,000 years ago. It will work in 5,000 years to come. If they hear about Krishna and feel more connected with Krishna, that is what ultimately satisfies the heart of all devotees, no matter in which century they live or and so on. Of course, there are things which change as the culture changes. For instance, a devotee now might be satisfied if you give him a tip how to do some Skype telephoning, how to arrange this. I don't know how to do it, but there's some free internet telephone possibility apparently, and something which is new or now this was in terms of objects but you know, things practical, but also now you need to really talk to the devotees about if you can help them how to find their place. That's the real issue. That's a big issue in ISKCON today. We never thought about this 15 years ago. How to situate ourselves, how to take care of the needs, financial needs, emotional needs, what else, physical needs. I remember when I was joining the movement, I would go barefoot in the winter because I thought I'm not the body. It is proven in the Bhagavad Gita. There are many verses I know. And nowadays, I would not satisfied if you would tell me, please, Maharaj, go barefoot. I would be more satisfied if you would offer a suitable pair of shoes for the cold winter. yes, we do change, and our values change, and our needs change. There's something which does not change, and these are these eternal spiritual principles. And I believe as ISKCON matures, we will be able to more place the things where they belong. We will know, here we need some good Krishna Katha, some good chanting on one side, but we also need some good arrangements where we can function as normal human beings who are in the process of purification. And I think at the moment, at least in my times means when I joined ISKCON, said, we take care of all your needs. And because ISKCON was only aware of that spiritual need at that time, Prabhupada was aware of all the other needs, and he wanted so much to establish Varnashram. You all know, you have heard many statements about this. He even said, I heard statements, I hope it's correct, but he said 50% of his work is undone. You know, he has not yet done Varnashram. I've heard, and I seem to remember, I've read this. Lila Shukha Prabhu, is it true? Have you heard or seen? You, I also written, huh?
Yes, what's his name? The devotee who is in Hawaii, Shilashpatsman.
Yeah.
He wrote a whole book on
Varnashrama. Yeah, in that connection.
And it's mentioned in that book.
Yeah.
I heard Bhakti Chirusami in a seminar say that he personally heard that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So the devotees say Lila Shukha Prabhu's remembers that this was in a book published by Sureshwara, where Sureshwara Prabhu collected Prabhupada's statements on Varnashrama. Krishna Kumar heard Bhakti Charu Maharaj saying this, and mentioning that he, Bhakti Charu Maharaj, heard this personally from Prabhupada's lips. So he was aware that his movement needed that, but I know we tried in Germany like anything, and we had at that time enough intelligentsia, enough spiritual guidance, or guidance in this direction, and money also, but we the devotees thought this is not important, or we could not implement it, because devotees somehow, it was also the fault of our is us who were leading this endeavor, but it was not successful. But I think the leaders now are very much aware that this is the demand which comes from the devotees. I mean, it screams into your face when you go in any temple. You hear it almost, an overwhelming cry. Where do I fit? What do I do? How do I maintain my family? I want to marry, and yes, how do I get them Lakshmi? And you know, this is a, it is a need now. Krishna. But still, the same devotees, they need to sit down, hear a nice bhajan, see a nice, and feel, oh, Krishna. That is also there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's our Rangadevi, because don't worry. Out of fear, yes. Rangadevi heard that we are all servants of Krishna, and do serve Krishna out of love, but here we hear that the powerful Ishvaras, they do everything motivated by fear. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows out of fear of me, the sun shines out of fear of me, and Rangadevi, if you are a pure devotee, you will be impelled by love. But if you are not so pure, you will know, oh, well, if I don't do this, there will be consequences. I better do it. In other words, you will be, impelled by fear. It's something like the morning program. You know, when you are loving Krishna, you want to see him on the altar in the morning as he has gotten up. And if you are not yet full of love, you go to the Mangal Aarti out of fear, so that you don't, you will not become criticized and don't get an email, and get your prasadam, you know. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry, hopefully you will find this joke appropriate. Not a, if you're out of love, running to the altar, for Gopinath, as he just woke up here, I must see him, I just can't, you know, or you go out of fear, if you don't have love, that you, oh Krishna, I will be so criticized, and you know, Prabhupada said, one who doesn't come to the morning program, he is not my disciple. My God, I don't want this to happen to me, you know. And then you run out of fear. Hare Krishna. It's like that. Good. We will end here. I will also say goodbye to the community here. I was very, very glad to be in your association. I know when you are living at a place, in a temple like this, you have to, you know, there are many things to consider and concern. The daily life is there. Maybe even something like a daily routine. Things are repeating themselves. And then we may not always see the blissful aspect or the successful aspect of our work. But I must really congratulate you. It's for us who come here, it's really the kingdom of Gopinath. It's such a wonderful atmosphere. The community in our eyes seems to be so much together. They attend the programs. Also I saw, I believe yesterday, I counted at one place at the same time, three buses. Did you see this? Manohar Prabhu told me, maybe you had to cook for above 120 meals, isn't it? 136 meals, you know, of people who are feeling happy in Krishna consciousness. And I remember these people really take a lot home. We were sitting, we decided one part of our course, we would sit under the trees and get the fresh breezes for refreshment and learn in this way. And then there was this man coming and, can I photograph? Yes, of course, come close where the best angle and perspective is there. You know, and he was really highly impressed, you know, making his automatic camera ping, you know, and making the photo. I thought it was very, very nice how these people are becoming exposed to Krishna consciousness. It's really a worthwhile project. And we have the college is here, yes, the human things in the college are there. Falling in love and falling out of love is also there. Human beings, young people, this is what happens to young people. Yes, this is very nice. It is, I want to say the college is very nice. These other things are also happening, and it's all right. This is human beings were always like this. It's not something new. And yes, it's very nice. So I want to encourage you, please. If nothing works in my life, I will come to Radhadish. I will say to Hriday Chaitanya, I'm not a good devotee, but please give me shelter. It's a very nice place. Yes. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sisi Radha Gopinath ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.
Jai.